All lines are now bridged.
Great. Good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to welcome you back to the U.S. CDI Task Force. And we're really excited to have you join us today, and lots to cover, so we'll jump right in. I am going to start with roll call and to kick us off, and I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
Good morning.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning, I'm here.
Hans Botendijk.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Jim Gerges. And Kawamoto.
One.
John Kilbourne.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Glenn McDonald. Aaron Meary. Brett Oliver. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
Sasha Termott. Andy Truscott. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Dan Breeman.
Good morning.
And Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Okay, good morning, everybody. And if we missed your name, I'll keep track as you dial in and note your attendance. So with that, I will turn it over to Stephen and Leslie. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mike. Thank you all for showing up this morning. We really appreciate it. We're definitely into the home stretch of our first phase of work in anticipation of our recommendations to the HITECH that are due early next month. We have been continuing to complete meeting notes and post those to the public website. Those are available for everyone's review, and I hope people take the time to look at them. If you have any questions, this would be a great time to raise those. Hearing none, just know that that those are there. We really have a lot to get through, and I wanted to kind of orient us here. Why don't you go to the next slide here? Thank you. We went through the roster as part of the roll call. Let's skip to the following slide. And we have done a lot of work, again, on the task force charges. I think there were a couple of additional comments entered. I think, Grace, you had, or no, it was Michelle, I think, had a new 1A that we want to look at. And then we're going to jump right back into the 1C, which is going to be really our focus here. But I want to remind everyone that we have, you know, we have an opportunity and I think a responsibility to put together a set of recommendations to the HITECH and subsequently to ONC that really can move the needle a bit here on USCDI version 2 as that is prepared. I think we've heard pretty loudly and clearly from Al and from others at ONC that version 2 is not going to be a huge change from version 1, that there are clearly some opportunities for us to have an impact, but I don't think it's going to be a revolutionary impact. I don't think we're going to go from, you know, 6 new items to 60 new items. And I think while we have just tremendous enthusiasm for lots of additional items to be added, I think we owe it to ourselves and to the community to really be selective and to really take the time to figure out what is going to be of the highest value. So I think as we get into the spreadsheets today, I hope some of you have had a chance to spend some time with them. You'll see some new columns that we've added. One is in reflection of conversations we've had here where Hans and Ricky and Clem and others have said, gee, you know, if there's an item that's already well established and in use and as such is fully represented in both U.S. Corps and CCDA, you know, why would we not include that in USCDI? So that's, I think, one kind of hypothesis that those things that are at that intersection of CCDA and U.S. Corps we should have a low bar or a lower bar for suggesting that they be included in B2. So we've added a column, and Hans and Ricky have spent a lot of time populating it to help us to see which items are, in fact, in that intersection. So we can consider that as we go. Grace, of course, has done a lot of work adding items and detail, and we're going to try to get through as much of that as we can. Michelle, also from the CMS perspective, is here today with her team and support, and has, you know, we've talked a bit about the potential benefit of aligning USCDI with CMS's needs, and I think we want to give Michelle a chance to kind of talk through that and advocate for that position a bit today. And then I think at the end, what we really want to start to do is start to prioritize, because I think it would be, you know, ingenuous of us to just say that everything that we've flagged for 1C should be included. I think we would have missed our mark. So what I want us to do as we go through these is really think on the 1C items, are they, you know, top priority, medium priority, or lower priority? Of course, they're all priority, right, because we bothered to put them here. We feel strongly about them, but I think what we want to do is find those of the highest value. And then in the end, you know, the sense I've gotten from Al, and he's not going to commit, is that, you know, we might be able to bring forward a dozen new items for strong consideration into USCDI version 2. I'm not speaking for ONC. I don't think that's been stated definitively, but I think that if we can discipline ourselves to come up with, you know, roughly that number of items that we think are of the highest potential value for addition, I think that will serve us and our community well. So I just wanted to throw that out by way of introduction. Leslie, do you want to add to that?
No, I do want to add that in the actual justification for recommendations in our spreadsheet, I did add the applicable standards that were named in either the comments section or in the actual ONC documentation, so please correct me if I do not get those accurate. And if I especially said need investigation, it was simply because I couldn't find them. So please keep me honest. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Leslie. Okay. Any other sort of orienting comments that that anybody would like to offer before we dive in today? Great. All right. Sorry?
I wanted to ask a question about the prioritization and what ends up actually in version 2. And then based on our recommendations, does that dictate what may become level 2 and level 1 for future versions?
Again, our task is to make recommendations about what's going to be in version 2. We have not been asked or tasked with the job of focusing on comment level or level 1 items. I think when we get past our first bit of work and we're focusing in on the process and providing input for that, is an opportunity for us to come back and talk about, as we've said, guiding principles. We can certainly, you know, collect some suggestions for things, but I think a lot of that, you know, oh, it's a comment and it should be version level 1, it's level 1, it should be level 2. I think really those are comments that we should be placing individually onto the website as public comments in support of individual data elements. I don't think we're going to add a lot of value doing that here as a task force, but we can talk about that when the time is right.
Thank you for clarifying.
Al, do you want to add anything that I've said?
Yeah, no, I think I want to sort of clarify what Grace's question was in that I kind of by asking another question. Are you saying that the high-tech recommendations could directly change the level determination and therefore the consideration for adding to version 2? Or are you because the priority, I ask that because the prioritization criteria don't affect the level. The prioritization criteria are applied to level two data elements to determine which ones go into USCDI. But as part of the process review that Stephen was talking about for tasks two and three, making recommendations for or against the evaluation criteria or the level criteria that we've set would also be a useful input, but it wouldn't affect it this time around.
Thank you, Al, very much, and thanks for the question, Grace. On the first spreadsheet that we had, the USCDI Task Force recommendations, I don't see that anyone has added any comments to that spreadsheet in a couple of weeks, but I want to make sure that we don't miss anybody's input on those items that we spoke about earlier. Does anyone have a recollection that that there was something on that spreadsheet that they particularly wanted to revisit? Great.
Are you talking about the editable or the non-editable, Stephen?
The non-editable. It's called USCDI Task Force Recommendations. Yeah.
Just clarifying. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's go then to the member recommendations editable spreadsheet. And there were a couple of items that I just wanted to be sure that we covered. Again, sort of generally going in order of our tasks. But Michelle, I think that you entered an item that is flagged as task 1A, which again is relevant to data classes and elements from version 1, including their applicable standards version updates, and that's on row 3. So Al, I don't know if you can get the spreadsheet ready to share, but we're going to focus in on that. So Michelle, this had to do with problems, the use of ICD-10 terminology, and CMS recommending adding terminology to the problem data class. I think this is a pretty easy one. Do you want to just go through this quickly so we can clarify our position?
Actually,
remind
Steve,
me again the line we're on.
Yes.
You want to be on row 3. There you go. Thank you, Michelle.
No, Steve. Thank you. It's exactly that. It's just our recommendation that for problems, we have all talked about problems in the problem list that we have the ICD-10 so that we can be able to track that. Many of our quality measures are based with their specifications written by the ICD-10s.
And I've heard this bit of feedback from others as well in the community. Al, do you want to comment on, you know, where this is at with regard to the applicable standards?
There's been debate for years about whether or not problems ought to include ICD-10. And because of the historical reasons for using SNOMED only for problems, and it's in that vein that we advanced the encounter diagnosis, which with the applicable standards for encounter diagnosis would be ICD-10 or SNOMED. In part of our guidance for the certification, in the certification criteria for being able to capture and exchange problems, we do talk about the mapping between SNOMED and ICD-10, where systems might only be able to record. If systems can only record or are only recording diagnosis or encounter diagnosis and they don't capture SNOMED, then there is a mapping operation that can be done to map to a SNOMED code to meet the problem data element criteria for CERT. So we have talked about that in the past, and we're obviously open to recommendations about it, but we have there was discussion about this particular issue as far back as the 2015 certification rule, and we ended up landing on problems being represented only by SNOMED.
So okay, I'll chime in, Al, and really in support of Michelle's suggestion. I know that the EHR that I use primarily leverages ICD as a coding mechanism for problems on the problem list. You know, you can take an encounter diagnosis and just flag it to be added to the problem list. You can take a problem from the problem list and resolve it over to the past medical history. While the, I think there we do have mapping to SNOMED in the background that from the clinician's perspective and from the patient's perspective, I think the primary coding that we're looking at is ICD-10 at this point. So it does seem a little odd that ICD-10 is not included as an applicable standard for problems on the problem list. So curious what Clem has to say about this.
If I can get connected, let's see. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So the reality in most hospitals is that they use this commercial product, I won't promote the product, that converts what physicians say into any code. And there's very little, relatively little internal use of SNOMED in the U.S. except for two or three major institutions. So, so people are, and they have to use ICD-10, so that has a dominance. And the second thing is that ICD-11 is coming, and it's got much, it's much more attractive than ICD-10. So I'd be supportive of what Steve said, that we should allow it, and if ICD-11 is as good as it might be, you know, we could have a simpler world.
Stephen, I'd like to comment too that Steve, Clem, how you feel about this. I just see that one of the goals is concurrent coding, that people are constantly looking at how can we do concurrent coding through encounters. And starting with the ICD-10 as a problem seems to help to make that more of a reality.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Any other thoughts on this one? I'm tempted. Does anybody feel that the task force should not support this recommendation?
All right. This is Mark. I do not oppose. I think it's a good idea. I'll just flag that the Gravity Project Social Determinants submission also uses ICD-10 for problems, so it's further alignment. Thank you.
And just to clarify, this is Ricky. Is the proposal here to add ICD-10 as a requirement in addition to SNOMED, or encourage, or what's the exact proposal?
Michelle, you brought this forward. We could say it's allowable, or we could suggest that it be required.
Well, the truth is, I guess we would want to say to suggest that it's required, and kind of don't understand why we want the rework of having to map to something else in the background, especially when, quite honestly, providers, they understand ICD-10 better than they understand SNOMED. And within functionality, you're right, Steve. It's easy to move things concurrent coding using the ICD-10. So I guess we would want it, but at the minimum, we'd like it allowable at least.
Yeah, one consideration here is that the large health systems often have the capability of doing this translation. As Clem mentioned, they have software that makes that fairly easy. But if this is made available through an API, smaller app developers typically don't have that capability, and they may have a preference for one or the other. So I would say that if this is included, it should be in addition to SNOMED, not as a replacement for. And certainly both coding systems can be provided for any diagnosis.
This is Les. I think it's wise to take a stand on this, and that if you try to write software that does both SNOMED and ICD-10, it just gets complicated, and that you're essentially saying every piece of software has to have the mapping tables in it between the two, which are one-to-many relationships and pretty complex. So, no, I think it's one way or the other, really, and we should take a strong position.
And which position do you suggest, Les?
ICD-10.
Okay. just wanted to be absolutely clear there.
Yeah,
now, I think one
know,
of the...
We have to be pragmatists, and that ICD-10 is the pragmatic choice. SNOMED is the idealistic choice right now, perhaps for a global unification of that may one day happen, but of health.
So I think, though, clearly when we're talking about version 2, which is, you know, going to be published later this year, and expecting all applicable vendors to make a wholesale shift from SNOMED to ICD, that could be challenging. So I guess I'd ask if any of the EHR vendors would like to kind of weigh in on the, you know, how challenging such a shift would be.
This is Hans. I think a couple of notes is that frequently in the problems you might see more SNOMEDs, and in encounter diagnosis you will see more ICD-10. So I'm not convinced totally yet that we have to go for one or only everything ICD-10. But there's also a lot of translation going on that if one is used, the other one is added as well. It might vary based on EHR. So I think I'm not convinced that we should go to a everything must be ICD-10 and you cannot use SNOMED anymore. I think that you will see is that in whether it's in documents or US Core already in the profile for a condition already supports both SNOMED and ICD-10, not yet ICD-11. So I think we need to be a little bit more flexible there, and that for the purpose at hand, you will use ICD-10 when you go into reporting or billing or quality measures, and you go into SNOMED where that's needed, then you're going to go back and forth. Not a perfect one-on-one match, but I think that's more practical.
And
I think
just to
Ken
be clear,
has a comment.
Oh, sorry. Ken?
Sorry, I think Ken has a comment to add.
Yeah, thanks. So I think, given that if currently something is required, we should be very, very hesitant to say you have to make a change. I think that's a problematic issue, and the vendors represented on this call may not be representative of, you know, the less resourced EHR vendors. So I think we should I think we should be very, very careful about saying what something we required and you expected and you built things off of. Just kidding, we're changing it. I think it's probably fine to say yes, ICD-10 is also acceptable for these purposes. I think that's probably reasonable, but I would definitely not say something you used to be able to use you can't use anymore.
And this is, I wanted to add another point. I don't know, I can't see hands, so I don't know if I'm talking out of turn.
No, go ahead.
Because future versions of USCDI that are adopted through the standards version advancement process are all going to be voluntary until another round of rulemaking. Whatever requirements are in USCDI version 1, the last incorporated by reference standard that ONC's put out through rulemaking, that requirement will always be the requirement until changed by a future rule. And so the recommendation to remove SNOMED from as an applicable standard from problems isn't going to have any impact at all, because EHRs will always be required to support SNOMED until rulemaking changes up.
Could I just clarify something?
Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, I think I didn't really hear anyone saying that you disallow SNOMED. I think the positions were either allow ICD-10 as well or require ICD-10 as well. Those are the two issues, I think. And maybe CMS took the position, one position. Maybe they should speak to which one they want, or somebody else should.
We would want both ICD-10 and SNOMED. On the other hand, that's not what we get. Saying it's allowable at least is a first step.
Hans and Grace have comments as well. Hans?
I would like to ask a little bit more clarification. From earlier discussions, I thought that if you opt voluntarily to use USCDI version 2, thus in your certification at that point in time as well, that you have to conform to the entire USCDI. And if USCDI V2 were to include ICD-10 only, not SNOMED, besides the comments just made, which I agree with, is that you would therefore not support SNOMED. You have to support ICD-10, and you would not support SNOMED per se. So that's where I'm not sure what it means, is that you still have to support SNOMED, because that's not in USCDI V2 at that point in time, unless we put both in.
So I don't want to spend too much time on this because we have so much material to cover. I think that it's pretty clear where we stand on this. We think ICD-10 should be allowed. There are various ways that the ONC could do that. They could just say it could be there. They could say it must be there. They could eventually switch over if that seemed appropriate. Al, what were you going to say on that?
I agree with you about not spending too much time on it in this meeting, because this is a certification question about what the impact of adding it to a requirement versus replacing it as a requirement. That's a not an easy certification question to answer.
Grace, did you want to close this out?
Yes, I just wanted to know, regardless of which way we go, whether to allow or to require, I understand that certain vendors may not have the resources or capabilities, the smaller vendors. I'd like to see if the task force could comment on what would bring the most benefit to patients in the long term. Is there a difference between allowing, requiring, and is that the lens we should be looking through?
Anyone have a thought on that?
I do. From the terms of the patient, the advantages of adding ICD-10 and to this option is transparency all the way through to billing, and that can be very, very important when a patient is trying to decipher these different things. Inconsistent information, it becomes difficult. So I would agree that ICD-10 should be added, and also that Michelle points that at a future date we could consider whether one is sunsetted or not. But there is huge support for ICD-10 in a variety of workflows and for transparency.
Thank you.
Could I just add one more comment?
Sure.
The as far as patient access in particular, USCDI version 2 does advance the addition of ICD-10 and SNOMED for encounter diagnosis, which is a specific additional data element requirement for view, download, and transmit, which is the patient access certification criteria. So it's to say it's already in there. The ability to capture and exchange ICD-10 is already in built into what we have added to version 2.
Great. Thanks, Al. Okay, I want to move on.
I was just going to say, Stephen, this is a great process question for our future work about sunsetting and adding and requiring.
And Hans, I'm guessing that the cell 3N, it would be a yes, that this ICD-10 for problemless diagnoses would be supported by both CDA and US Core. Is that true, or can you populate that cell for us?
I'll populate, but for US Core, definitely. I was going through CCDA documentation, which you have to go through many documents to figure it out. I just need to double check whether that's correct. It's not that you could not do it, I think, but there's something weird about it.
Thank you. Okay, so that was a 1A. We were just sort of backing up there with Michelle. Hans, you have added Let me see. I think we went through this. I'm not seeing a task force recommendation on row. Sorry, the rows are so tall. I'm having a hard time seeing them.
And the font is very small.
Yeah, it's very small. Yeah, I don't know. Al can certainly. Yeah, Al can zoom in for sure. So row three, row four, we've been through. Row five is a grace item. We discussed but didn't come up with a recommendation. Oh, that was date of resolution. We're going to come back to that.
Dave, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Can we go back to encounters? Is that the row above?
Can you give me a row number? Because they're all over. Encounter diagnosis, row four you're talking about? The one we were just...
Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple of comments around encounter. I know we've spoken about encounter, and we've spoken about the data elements of time diagnosis and type, but CMS had also made a recommendation. I don't know if it got in here, if we put it somewhere different, for location of care, not the location of the provider, the location of the care, as well as encounter disposition. Is that reflected in here?
I think it is, but I'm not sure which row it's on, so I don't want to take our time going hunting for it.
Okay.
We'll stumble upon it when we get there. Okay. So, Michelle, I think that we should be on row six, actually, which is part of what you were just talking about. We have a task force discussion around encounter time, but we don't have a recommendation that came out of that. And I want to drive to solidify our recommendations. So Michelle's member recommendation was CMS recommends inclusion of encounter time, this is 1B, to ensure ability to identify start, end of encounters, including admission and discharge dates, times. We had a long discussion about justification.
I think Clem had a comment to this too.
Well, it's just really a clarification. So when we say time, do we mean date time? Do we need exact time or just the dates? That's one question. And the second one is that I don't know that it's going to be, I mean, for hospitalization, it's always been admission and discharge. It's not as clear in other circumstances, like a visit. They come in, you know, I don't know if people keep track, except it's on one date. So I just need some clarification of what's desired.
I think for hospitalizations, you're right, it's admission, discharge, but there are other places like the emergency department times that are important. Times of admission, times of deciding to admit somebody, times of discharge, times of getting to the floor. So there are a number of other sort of start-stop times that are important.
Are they collected?
Go ahead.
The
are they collected? That was the question.
Hospitals.
So again, this was a 1B, meaning that it is something that was included, encounter time, in draft V2. There were two questions here. One is, should it be date plus time? We can weigh in on that. And the other is, should there be both a start and a stop time? Obviously, there are a multitude of times that could be included. But I think we have to start somewhere. And it seems that what you're mostly interested in, Michelle, is sort of how long was the encounter, be it an inpatient stay, an ED encounter, et cetera. So it seems like date and time and start-stop times would be the things that we might want to weigh in on. Does anybody feel that it would be inappropriate for us to suggest including both date and time and both a start and a stop time, knowing that that's going to be a stretch, I think, for a number of vendors to put that in.
Hey,
Sasha has a comment.
Sasha?
Hey, folks. So we actually talked about this with EHRA, and we had a lively conversation. As Michelle points out, start and stop times are used in quality measurement today. The challenge with including it in USCDI, where it might be used for purposes beyond quality measurement too, and we wanted to be cognizant of that, is that while there is a high degree of precision as to the start and stop of an encounter, a hospital encounter, or an emergency department encounter, those are concepts that have a lot of definition and consistency across the industry. The same is not true of outpatient office visits, and we do not have a lot of precision as to the start and the stop of the encounter. And today in quality measurement, different EHRs use different sort of, approximations of that, maybe the scheduled appointment time and the scheduled duration. Some folks are actually measuring time spent by certain people in the chart. But those are, getting at a concept that just doesn't necessarily have a lot of standardization today. My recommendation, which I think my colleagues in EHRA were amenable to, would be to focus on the outpatient ambulatory side on just the date of the encounter. And on the inpatient side, where I think there is a high degree of standardization, I think using the start and stop time is very reasonable. But I don't want us to include start and stop times on the ambulatory side that are misunderstood, where if we're using, it's scheduled at 9 and it's a 15-minute visit, and then the patient looks at that in an app and is like, but my visit didn't even start until 9:30. That doesn't make sense, right, because it was running late. We don't necessarily have the consistency of understanding of what that means that we do on the inpatient side, if that makes sense.
Jim also has a comment to add.
I'm sorry, just one comment that from a CMS point of view, ED is ambulatory, so I would want us to exclude ED here.
I think the emergency department has the precision that I would typically see on the inpatient side. So, yes, I guess
okay.
Let's make sure we're clear that, in my mind, emergency department, inpatient, they have a lot of specificity around start and end, whereas an office visit, not an emergency department office visit, is where I think we lose some of that specificity on an exact start and stop time for a routine visit.
No problem with that.
Jim, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I wanted to concur with the comments just made about the precision. And to me, the question is, if it's included in USCDI, what does that one day mean as far as whether it's required that you report it? And the reason I say that is even in the ER, there is a little bit of fuzziness about, was it time they checked in? Was it time to greet? But particularly in the clinics, it's going to be a problem to include time. And my only question was, why do we need time for any of it? Why can't we leave it at date? Because the mischief that'll come from all the downstream secondary interpretations of time when there's not much precision, to me seems a greater risk than the benefits of trying to include time. I mean, people making conclusions about somebody's throughput, et cetera. So my vote would be, why not version one start with simply date of admission discharge?
Well, date would be one way to implement encounter time. Date time would be another way to implement encounter time. Admission day and time or admission date would be one way to implement encounter time. And it's unlikely that ONC has consistently had flexibility as far as how to implement any given date element. And it depends on the use case. So if we're talking about ED start-stop time, if we're talking about, if you're talking about an inpatient, admission day, there's different ways of implementing time or timing. Date time could be a time.
I get it. So to me, it seems like if we're wanting to provide the flexibility for detail for those use cases, but not require it, and allow flexibility to just do date and be compliant, then it makes sense to me from my perch to include all of it, but not realizing that it's not required that a certain level of granularity like time stamps are part of compliance.
And that's why we left it at the encounter date element of encounter time.
Grace had another comment as well.
I'm just wondering if it would be helpful to this under procedures or surgical, because that's where really the time is most accurate and most meaningful for reimbursement and billing? Are we looking at the right framework, broadly putting it under encounter information? Should it really be under procedures, perhaps?
Well, again, that wasn't proposed, so that's not in scope for us now. That's something that could be proposed later. So I'm going to try to push us through.
We have Daniel and Tom. Okay.
Go ahead. Al, if you can display the recommendation text that I have, there we go. That would be ideal, so we can be commenting on that. Go ahead, Dan.
Didn't fit in. Yeah, I want to speak in support of the recommendation. In part, it's important to clarify this begin and end with the flexibility that's been discussed, but leaving the reference to just time is not so clear, because time is really a duration. And actually what we're interested in is the fact that there is typically a start and an end, which, you know, looking sort of at the way, you know, FHIR or US Corps or I believe CDA as well represents this, it's a period data element which has both a start and an end component, which the end is optional, and actually the start is too, with that flexibility that Al was just describing, meaning the actual representation can have super precise stuff, but it can also simply just be a date. And I think that's exactly what we want. But the clarification that there is a start and an end in many instances, I think, is important, rather than leaving just the words time.
Comment.
I would support Dan fully on that as we are trying to indicate, at least you can support a date. The term time is going to be confusing. And we also have to be careful that while a date is for USCDI the starting point, that there are settings where more precision is appropriate. So I think period, I would completely agree with Nan that it's a better term. It covers better and then allows that as we get into the standards and the actual individual use cases where whether it's quality measures, billing, otherwise, that the appropriate level is there, understood much better. But that the general concept is encounter period that at least resolves and addresses the date.
Okay. So I have a recommendation that says include date and time to the minute, at least for acute care encounters, including hospital and ED. Require encounter start stop times for inpatient and ED encounters, and would need to specify precisely what times constitute start and stop times for these encounters. Anybody disagree with that as a recommendation? All right, let's keep going. All right, I want to shift to kind of give the floor to Michelle to kind of give an overview of your items. And again, I'm sort of trying to slowly, or not so slowly, narrow into what will be our recommendations. And I fear that if we're going line by line, we're not going to get through everything here. So I want to kind of come up with some guiding principles for us. You know, we've got column N now with the CDA US Corps intersection. I think we want to kind of get a handle. I think Grace has spent some time talking about, you know, generally the items that she's entered, and I want to give the same opportunity to Michelle, and then we can go back to the line-by-line work.
So thanks, Steve. We've done the first two that were on our list. I want to talk one more thing about encounters, and that's disposition, certainly to disposition, covering the hospital discharge disposition, such as home, post-acute care, hospice, otherwise, including disposition from another part of the hospital, such as disposition from the ED. So again, it gets back to, for CMS, the ED is seen as something that is ambulatory. But longer term, I know we had this conversation, we also believe we need disposition from other facilities, such as a SNF to home or to home health or to hospice, and so forth and so on. But starting with the hospital and the emergency room, is something we'd like to advocate for. The other thing we want to make sure to include is identification. and I know we've had lots of conversations about identification as an NPI, but just to put a few more out there for consideration, one is the TIN, which is the tax ID number, which defines a group. Billing is done by that, and a lot of quality measure reporting is done like that. Supporting the addition of a patient identifier, such as the Medicare patient ID, and if there are other appropriate payer IDs that are important for us, that would be important to have, so that as we're looking at patients, this is another way really of identifying a patient. And finally, we'd also like to recommend including the health insurance coverage type as another identifier. And I think, frankly, that's useful for patients being able to see that as well. Moving forward,
Michelle,
yeah.
To orient us and so that we can capture the discussion of these points, can you point us to specific rows where you put these in? I found row 11 where Leslie had initially suggested including encounter time, type, location, disposition, diagnosis, and I think that's where you were when you said that you desired disposition information from SNF facilities, but I just want to be sure.
Yep, that one's fine. I don't know where identification is. The next ones that I'm going to do start at line 33.
Okay.
I'm following the spreadsheet on your spreadsheet because I only have so much screen that I can open.
Yeah, that's okay. So line 33 is encounter information, encounter location, which you recommended including in V2. Now, interestingly, if we look over at column N, what Hans and Ricky tell us is that that this encounter location is a must support in U.S. Core. It's not required in CDA, and it's not certification tested for CDA. And here again, I don't know that this is an absolute criteria for us to recommend something be advanced to V2, but it's certainly a very nice to have. I think we're going to have a harder time advancing items to V2 that are not well specified in both U.S. Core and CDA. Clem?
Yeah, just clarification again. So I think we ought to, what location isn't clear to me. We've got setting, we got location, the physical location, and we may have this thing, you know, virtual or not. So I just think we need more clarity. I'm not sure what we're talking about always here. And the other thing, I think when we think about setting, there's different, I don't want to reopen the other discussion, but there's different issues with psychiatric encounters because they kind of commute, you know, they link them together, and with nursing home encounters and other kinds of encounters. So I don't want to reopen that wound, but we should probably specify a setting when we decide what we're going to do and take a couple of them, not try to swallow the ocean.
And our recommendation is hospital and ED.
Okay. So when you say hospital and ED, what do you mean in terms of location? Just name of hospital, address, you know, what exactly are you looking for?
Location is actually hospital, office, ambulatory, surgery, and home. It actually is. I was thinking of disposition. So, but in particular, if we had to vote for something, it's hospital and within the hospital, particularly ED and ICU and cath lab.
But are those settings in ICD? I mean, CMS is defined as a list of settings, I think. Maybe I'm mixing it up.
Michelle, can you point to the specific data element? Or maybe Sasha knows this off the top of her head.
Hans has his hand up as well.
Oh, good.
Hans?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I consideration with some of these where one standard or implementation guide is already supporting it with the guidance and the other one not quite. It's not that it could not handle it. It's not just the guidance is not there. Another consideration would be is that if we don't consider it for version 2, can we already start to signal as part of our next part of the process that, hey, these kind of things that are supported in one standard and where they need to be in sync, those are likely candidates so people can start to work towards that and get that ready for the next round. So just as a procedural question to consider to help make decisions on what to recommend or not. Clearly, when one supports it, then the other one doesn't, or is clearly has the guidance for it, but the other one doesn't, the data is there. It should work to get it in.
To add on, I guess I'm still a little bit confused. I would think of location as like address, and it sounds like we're actually talking more about like a value list of particular care settings. What are we actually contemplating here?
Thank you, Sasha.
Sasha, from a CMS point of view, it is, you're right, a facility setting. It's not address. So it's hospital/ICU or hospital/cath lab. And, you know, you can go outside the bounds of a hospital, but since we want to prioritize, those would be the key ones.
So you're saying it's setting, not address. Is that correct?
Correct. It is set the location of the service, but not the address of the service. Location of the service.
Michelle, it's Leslie on a question. Is that well defined when a patient moves within setting to setting inside a hospital? I mean, ED to inpatient seems good, but going to a rehab facility that's co-located or moving from IC to step down, how do you contemplate that?
I'm going to have to rely on Sasha for that. I think those are defined.
Gosh, I got to check with a colleague and phone a friend on that one. I don't know how clear. I think you would know when people are going to cath lab, but I got to check.
Well, hey, it's Jim Gerges. Are we talking about the precision and accuracy of the timestamps? Because
this isn't time, Jim. We're on location
now. This
now.
Is just location.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to take another call. My apologies.
Yeah, and feel free to use the hand raising too, Jim, but go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
So we might know movement, but it might, for instance, to your point, Sasha, someone goes to a cath lab, they're not actually moved to a necessary setting and care. They have an order to appear for a particular test, which it then takes place. And then, so I think there's a lot of ambiguity even within a hospital, and I'd like to hear others' comments as well.
Well, and part of the challenge is that location is, in some senses, a metadata about another thing, right? It doesn't mean that much independent. So we're going to associate this, I guess, setting, right, with a particular encounter. If the encounter is at the level of the hospitalization, then the setting metadata, it sounds from Michelle's thing, might actually be multiple because at the level of the hospitalization, which is the encounter that we're associating this with, you might have an admission that also includes a visit to the cath lab. And I think that's where it's starting to get tricky. Whereas if we were trying to associate setting with a procedure, it might be different than associating setting with an encounter, if that makes sense.
So, Stephen, it sounds like there's enough ambiguity here that we don't have agreement.
That's the sense that I'm getting as well.
Me too.
And I'm checking FHIR and CCDA. There are some fields that might cover it, but depending on the vocabulary exactly being used, it might not. So that if it's meant to be setting more, we need to check a little bit further what's already there.
Okay, so just, Clem, you got your hand up?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of problems here. One of them is we don't have fixed lists. not quite sure what universe we're talking about. And then when you get down to these really micro steps in an institution, I don't think people are able to capture that. So there's a whole different story talking about steps from here to there. There's machinery that could do it, but I don't think it's widely used.
All right. So what I'm going to say in summary is that, you know, it's great that this made it up to level two. And it does sound like there is still work to be done. Leaving it in level two does flag the industry that this is something that ONC is considering. But I don't think we have consensus here that this should be elevated to V2 at this point. Is that accurate?
I think that's fair. And it would have that then there's further clarification to avoid the confusion what a location means, what's really the intent behind it that would help to clarify to progress it.
And I did, just for everybody's maybe some assistance or guidance, I did add the data element definition as submitted for encounter location in the chat window. And I'll try to do that as these come up.
In the public chat? Somehow I don't see that.
It might be further.
Al, yeah, feel free to add that to the spreadsheet, I would say. Okay, so in terms of, and I'm just going to try to go as we go, so I'm going to call this Task 1C Priority 3. So this is a lower priority for us in our consideration than other 1Cs. So, Michelle, do you want to point us to another one here so that we can give you a chance to make
34.
Your case?
We can just take them in order. Let's go to row 34.
Great. Go ahead. This is encounter disposition.
We talked about this one already, the encounter disposition. So keep going.
Well, wait. So, well, we talked about it, but we want to come to a recommendation.
Okay.
We don't want to keep revisiting these, right? So you're right. This duplicated one that was up above that and I captured some of your. It was one that let, and again, I encourage all of you to try to find the same item. If it's already there, don't keep adding the same item in multiple places because we'll never get through it all. So here we go. I found what we talked about, that you desired disposition information from SNF facilities. Was there anything more you wanted to say about that?
I hope so. Disposition, hospital disposition, ED disposition, and eventually long-term care facilities as well. That's fine.
So this is on row 34. Okay. Al gave us the data element. Okay.
Just as a question, since I think this will matter for the other one we said was just applicable to hospital versus office visits also, how will that be handled in certification, right? Like, if you make a product that's used in dermatology offices, it may not be practical to capture encounter disposition if we're deciding that's primarily relevant for hospitals and long-term care and emergency departments. You might be able to view it if you got a record from a hospital, but you wouldn't necessarily capture it. Do we have the sort of certification complexity to address differences by setting yet, or is that a prerequisite to adding this type of data class?
Sasha, I don't know if that question was to me or to the group.
Why don't you go ahead, Al?
Well, we there are some sort of situations in which we distinguish between different care settings for certification requirements, and that's tested through the different test data. We've got ambulatory and inpatient test data for certification and testing, and so we have not, to your question, Sasha, about whether or not we could specify certain criteria or test data for a very specific particular care setting, subset of ambulatory, such as dermatology or not. It's unlikely that we would be that granular in our test data and testing, if we did specify or narrow down the care settings for testing and certification, it would likely be at the level of ambulatory versus inpatient, possibly ED as a different kind of care setting.
That's helpful. I guess to give my perspective, I think that as we've discussed before, the concept of encounter disposition has standardization in the inpatient context that does not present in the my version of ambulatory context, not thinking about the emergency department. And so, you know, if including this in version two means every dermatologist's product and every dermatologist is now expected to somehow have this concept, I think that's a big lift and something we would need to consider more. If we have a way to differentiate and say where we have consensus on this concept at a hospital discharge, let's include it and, you know, share it through USCDI, I think that's a more reasonable thing to include in version two. So I think if we have the flexibility to accommodate in certification so that we're not forcing, you know, every specialty product used in different office settings to have a concept that they haven't maybe had familiarity with today, then it will be okay. But if we don't have that flexibility in certification, then I think we need to hold off on this data element until we reach that degree of flexibility.
So what I'm hearing is a recommendation that I just tried to capture here to include encounter disposition in version two for hospital and ED encounters, and to somehow signal that this will in the future be included for long-term care facilities, or should we ask for that in version two as well?
I think we can signal it in the future.
Okay. Anyone disagree with this approach? All right. I've captured that. Michelle, did you have another one that you wanted to focus in on?
What's the next one down?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. We didn't prioritize 30. That. I want to prioritize this. So okay. Encounter disposition, the inclusion for hospital and ED encounters, do we see that as highest, more medium, or lower for our suggestions?
It's high, and it's mostly out there, done. I think mostly people record it.
Well, we do have the note in column N that U.S. Corps is marked as must support, CDA is not required and not tested. So,
okay.
But I think that goes back to the data is there. Otherwise, U.S. Corps would have a problem. So this is one of those balancing areas is that we think is that V2, that we can start to then expect it in CCDAs as well, or we need a little bit of extra work for the guidance on where to, and how to do it.
And do we feel that selecting or promoting an element that is not yet in the CCDA, do we think that that's reasonable? Is that a good idea?
It's not that it's not... It is in CCDA in the guide, but it's not currently part of the required capabilities of CCDA to include that. So that means that not everybody might have done it. So do we feel that putting it in V2 is sufficient to not go along? In FHIR, it's already a must support for hospitalization topics.
I see.
Let's
so
just do it.
It's in the CCDA. Okay, so am I hearing this as a top priority one? Encounter disposition for hospital and ED? One, very good.
Yes.
All right, sorry, Michelle, next one.
Okay, that was row 34, is that correct?
That was 34, yes, sorry.
34, okay, so 35, hopefully is straightforward. This is identification, and this is adding the Medicare patient ID.
Could I comment on
facility? This is the facility ID 36.
I was on 35. 35 is the patient. And 36.
Okay, sorry.
So I'd like to comment, if I could.
Yes.
Go ahead, Clem.
I mean, this is something everybody wants, and I guess the only concern is it allowed? If we could get clarity that it's allowed, I'd be very supportive of it.
Well, the Michelle? Prohibition isn't on Medicare identity. It's on a general patient identity, and I don't know how that applies. Al might be able to talk to that. When I tried to find the standards, and Michelle, I'll need your help on this, or Hans, I'm looking for a Medicare-specific standard, and I didn't know whether a Medicare-specific standard for identity can be taken out of context of overall patient identity, or are we talking about all types of patient identifiers? So I'd love some clarification as well.
This is a specific patient identifier, and I can go back to our group and get even more clarity.
But it would be terrific if we could get this widely adopted for all many, many, many purposes.
Absolutely.
Whether it collides with something else is what we got to find out.
Well, but again, so what I think the ask is from Michelle is if the patient has a Medicare patient ID, an MBI, that be transmitted as part of the U.S. core data set, that we're not talking about other patient identifiers, but specifically the Medicare patient ID. Does anyone feel that that would be a problem?
Well, again, I think it's a good idea, but I wonder whether we should have a field named that or have a field with the type. I'm sorry to get, we'd be maybe getting off the subject though.
So that means is that for every transition of care or any access, that then the MBI becomes available. If we feel that is appropriate and acceptable to be exchanged to that extent, if not, then at least we should clarify that while it's generally in US CDI, so there has to be the ability for certain use cases to support it, we might still need to indicate that there's guidance needed as to when or when not to include it if there's a concern.
I will go back and make sure there's not a concern on CMS's part.
Okay, we will not come up with a recommendation for this one yet.
Yeah, we think not, but I want to verify that.
Okay, Michelle, bring us back here when we meet next time.
And you're right, the next line, I will, thank you. The next line of 36 is the facility identification. For us, that's the CCN number, which is a billing number. It's a facility number, and there may be other facility information numbers, but this is the one that we particularly support.
Go ahead, Clem.
Well, I just want to clarify, is this the NPI organizations that have a national provider ID as well as people? That's what we're talking about?
No, the NPI I thought was for providers. This is actually a hospital number. It's a billing number that Medicare uses. It's the CCN. I don't know what it stands for.
Well, NPI is for providers and includes the definition. A hospital is a provider. So are individuals. I think we just try to clarify which is which.
It's the facility ID, correct? Sasha has some comments to add as well.
Okay. The facility ID.
So I have a question about what we're associating this with. If we're providing, if we're saying like what encounter, for example, what CCN a particular hospitalization takes place in, or what tax ID a particular office visit takes place in, I don't think it would be problematic to associate these at the encounter level. But again, this is like a metadata thing. We've had enormous problems though with MIPS when the reporting involves associating things that don't really have like a tax ID associated with the action, like placing a prescription. And then it gets very confusing because people will place a prescription. They're not necessarily thinking that their prescription is particularly associated with one tax ID or another tax ID, the way a visit is in that way. And that gets complicated. So I guess if we're, my question is the data element of the facility ID being the CCN or the PIN seems fine, but is the data class the facility level data, or is the data class really the encounter?
It may be the encounter.
I think associating a tax ID or a CCN with an encounter where applicable is fine. There are going to be some types of encounters that potentially don't have either. So obviously we'd need to accommodate.
Correct.
So this would be another one of those, when it's available, consider it to be part of US CDI and require it to be exchanged.
Only associated with encounters, though, yes.
And then it's only encounter, it's the service providers, the organization that is providing that encounter, their CCN, correct?
That was my understanding.
Okay, so really this is not data class facility level in row G. This is rather going to be encounter information, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and the data element. Now, the challenge, though, is what does encounter have for, what is the data element under the encounter information, the applicable data element for this suggestion, then?
I would actually split these into two separate data elements and not try to generalize as facility organization ID, but simply say TIN and CCN. And they're not analogous, like you would in a product store those separately. They each have different formatting requirements. So I would just have one encounter data element that was TIN and a different one that was CCN. And, of course, some encounters will have one or the other.
But I would put on that that it's the encounter organization so that it can be identified as the encounter organization's identifier, and then TIN and CCN are the two that you're calling out. But it's the organization that's responsible for that encounter.
Yes, that's fair, Han.
Well, could someone still explain how it relates to the NPI?
It doesn't.
It's not directly related to NPI, Clem. The NPI would potentially be an additional level about the person involved in a tax ID. So, like, MIPS, for example, is reported at the level of the tax ID and the NPI.
But NPIs apply to whole hospital systems, too. I look at the Medicare data. They have two categories. They cover the whole system and they cover the individual.
I'm not familiar with that usage. When we identify hospitals today, it's typically by the CMS certification number or CCN.
Okay, but they exist. There's thousands of them.
So, Clem, you've raised this point a couple of times, and I don't want to ignore it. To be clear, what I'm hearing us coming around to is a recommendation for TIN and CCN to be added as data elements associated with encounter information in US CDI version 2. Is that what people are saying?
Dan, did you have something to add to that? Are you okay?
I was just going to clarify that the NPI at the facility level is a separate thing from the CCN. The CCN is about an organization's certification under Medicare and what services they're sort of certified for. So they sort of coexist in certain contexts. That's all.
Thank you.
All right. I think we have time for one more, Michelle, before we go to public comment at 5 minutes
right.
to the hour.
I'm just going to comment on row 37 because it's really row 38 that I wanted to get to and then stop. Row 37 is just coverage type. So if there's a way that we can include coverage type, then that's not just for CMS, I would think. But I want to move further on that. I know you want to solve all of these. 38, though, I think is really high priority, and we've had a number of conversations already. We just want to support social determinants of health. We think this is a huge opportunity now to move equity forward in this country. It is a very big priority of the new administration. We're fully supportive, actually, of the work that Gravity has done, and we just want to support that and be sure that we're trying to include the data elements as defined really by them. And then,
so just to be clear, and we've talked about this before, our task for 1C is to identify specific data elements that were included in level 2 that we feel should be brought forward into version 2. So what specific level 2 data element are you referring to here?
I think that there are structural standards that exist for some of these that we can. So we have race and ethnicity, which is already in version 1, and we are recommending gender identity, sexual orientation, a consideration of disability status, transportation, housing, food insecurity, and I will stop there.
So, Mark, can you comment? Sorry, Mark's an expert here.
Yes,
Mark, again.
As Michelle has written it out under data element, that was the second alternative that the Gravity Project submitted for USCDI, and it is classified as level 2. So I understood your point, Stephen, to be about scope. It seems to be within scope. There's maybe further discussion about the particulars, but as I understand it, it's in scope for our task.
And this is the data element that she's included here: assessment, goals, interventions, outcomes, problems, health concerns.
Correct.
That is the data element in question. Okay, so that's the one that we've been talking about. This is the social determinants data element that made it into level 2, and the proposal here is to bring that to version 2.
But aren't these all observations as a class?
Health concerns would be problems, or so some of them are observations, other ones are not. And for some of them, Gravity has been doing a lot of work to get the fire profiling done. They are in flight, and some areas in CCDA would have to be clarified, some are covered. So we need to dig a little bit deeper what's already there, what still needs to be profiled or guidance developed.
So when I, and Cheryl, we'll get you in just a sec, I just want to reiterate that when I look on the website, the public website, level 2, indeed, SDOH is a class, and indeed it has 5 data elements defined in it. So when Al and company went through the Gravity Project submission, they said these 5 data elements within this data class are good enough for level 2. So this is, I think, really sort of the crux, if you will, of our whole social determinants discussion, is whether we as a task force are going to recommend advancing these 5 data elements in one data class from level 2 to version 2. And I guess, Cheryl, your hand's still up. Maybe you can include in your comments whether you think that's a good idea.
Sorry, Cheryl? I think I was on mute. Yes, I think I listed in my, because I added these to the spreadsheet a few weeks ago, the 6 data elements that I pulled from the Gravity request that they felt were matured enough. So that they may be expressed a little bit differently than Michelle's, but I think it's the same data that we're talking about.
Well, I'm just confused by problems being a new data class. They're already.
Well, this is not problems, Clem. So if you look at it, this is called, it's problems / health concerns. And this was, in fact, submitted by Mark. So maybe, Mark, you can clarify how this differs from problems on the problem list.
So we.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We created two alternatives. One is the way people often think of social determinants by the subject matter, so food insecurity is an example. The other was by the activity used. So
So assessment, problems, health concerns, et cetera. Gravity Project is working to fill in the value sets, the terminology for the, that would be used for those. So those are, some of it is existing, some of it is new, and we are working to, as Hans said, in flight, ballot already gone in the balloting process for a fire implementation guide for clinical care.
Well, I still
that's,
have
why,
several...
that's why it's listed here in the way it is, that it is as activities, and I think that's why ONC said, yes, it's level two.
I saw an earlier version. It was very explicit, and this looks very general.
There were two alternatives, Clem.
So, Clem, I guess I would invite you and anyone else who has questions about this to review the submissions of the individual data elements that are leveled at level two.
Is that what's showing in this spreadsheet? It's too small to read.
There's much more. I will put it in the public chat. This is the link to where the details are included on the public website for the five data elements in question.
Okay.
So what the recommendation would be then, Stephen and Mark is, and Michelle, is that this would be moving to V2, and where this information was collected, it would be available.
My understanding. Yes.
Okay. I've captured that as a recommendation, and Clem, I really want to make sure that you're fully, you know, informed on this. So I think I'm going to put this in as a sort of a, I'm going to flag this for us to come back to next week. Again, I see this as very important to our task force's work, because I think this is one of the areas of greatest concern that we've heard from our community.
Yeah, well, I'm generally supportive. I can't be sure what this is as it's stated. Used to think I knew what it was.
The other thing I will point out again, and perhaps ask Hans and or Ricky to comment quickly, is you specify that this is not yet profiled in U.S. Core, that it's in flight and not fully supported in CCDA. So I think us throwing our weight behind this, you know, puts us at some risk that it will not succeed if the standards are not there to support it.
Yeah, it depends on which parts we're looking at. So if we're looking to say we can use existing problems diagnosis, and we just need to clarify which codes we're looking at that or goals, that would be one thing. If we're looking at consent in CCDA, that's not quite there necessarily to the extent of interest. So I think it's a mixed bag on what's there. And Gravity, as Mark also said, it's in flight. They're working hard on it to get that done, which then would provide appropriate guidance to move forward with that. But it's not there yet. It's not finished.
Okay. And I will take us to public comment now and just say that I will endeavor to collapse the various submissions around this item into a single row between now and our next meeting, and hopefully have time to do that for a number of these duplicates. Public comment?
Operator, can you please open the public comment line, please?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments.
And while we're waiting, I'll just note that we are meeting next week. The task force will meet starting at 10:30 a.m. I think it's a little bit shorter meeting next week. And also I'll plug our ONC annual meeting is next Monday and Tuesday. It's going to be held virtual, of course. It's going to start around about from noon to 5 p.m. The agenda is on the website. And if you haven't already registered and would like to register, you could just search ONC Annual Meeting, and it'll pull up, and you can register on our website. Okay, operator, do we have any comments?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay, thank you. Stephen?
Very good. All right. So let's just pause for a second and remind ourselves that we are going to be presenting our work to USCDI, to the HITECH, I should say, on Thursday, the 15th of April. So what that leaves us with is really 2 more weeks to do the work, which is why we reintroduced a shortened meeting next week. So we will meet on the 30th and the 6th, I think by the 13th, 2 days prior to the HITECH presentation. We will likely, Mike, will we have to have turned in our slides before the 13th, or can we turn them in at the end of the day on the 13th for the HITECH on the 15th?
Yeah, that would be fine. We just have to send them out prior to the meeting, so we actually have until the following day, Wednesday, if you need it.
Perfect. Okay, so we have 3 more meetings to come to consensus and conclusion on this work. When we have our task force co-chairs debrief later today or later this week, whenever it is, we will start to think about the format for our presentation and our recommendations. Usually those recommendations come forward as a prose report in addition to a presentation in slide format. So we'll be working on that over the next few weeks and, again, trying to come to conclusion on these submissions. As I said, I think that there's some more work that that the co-chairs need to do. I had hoped that people, as they were making submissions, would find the same data elements that other people had recommended and add their comments to those, but I don't think that quite happened. So I know everybody's pressed for time, and that's a higher bar. So Leslie and I will attempt to do some of that work to basically collapse recommendations around a given data element together so that we can go through them in a more organized manner. Leslie, you want to add to that at all?
No, but please, only if the standards that I have indicated in the justification are inaccurate, please change those as well. And other than that, thank you.
Thank you all for your time and attention. We will look forward to a one-hour meeting next week and hope that all of you who have an interest will join the ONC meeting. It's an amazing agenda that the team has put together, and I think a lot that will inform our appreciation for what the ONC is trying to accomplish so that we can support that in every way we can. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.